Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big tie.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Larry Rhodes, your Doubter 5. This is WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Wednesday, July 18th, about 7 p.m. So if that's not your date and time on your watch, then you're listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast. But since it is live and you'd like to join in the conversation with real live atheists, you can call the number 865-333-5937 and we'll put you on the air. A Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you how you can connect with them in just a minute. Wombat is not with us right now, but he's going to be as soon as he gets home, gets his phone, and calls in. He'll join us probably about 10 minutes after. My DJ name is Doubter5, and you can write the show at doubter5@digitalfreethought.com. I don't think there's a way to directly write Wombat, but write me and I'll share it with him. And did you know that we have an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? That's right. It's going on right now. Literally right now. It goes from 6:30 to 7:30 on Wednesday night. But don't switch away from the program, but you can turn it on without sound if you like. Just go to Comcast Channel 12 or, let's see, what's the other one? Let's see, Comcast or Charter. 192 is the channel on Charter. You can watch it streaming online by going on your browser and type in ctvknox.org right now. And you'll see it streaming live with a couple of live atheists right there on the air. And you can call into that show as well. The TV show's name is Free Thought Forum. And they're on every Wednesday from 6:30 to 7:30. If you've missed some shows and like to go back and watch some of them, you can go to YouTube where some archives are. Not every show is there, but there's a lot of shows that have been broadcasting for over 8 years here in Knoxville. Go to YouTube and search for the words Free Thought Forum Knoxville. And if you're interested in getting involved with the TV show or the radio show, you can come to any ASK meeting or RET meeting, that's Atheist Society of Knoxville or Rationalists of East Tennessee, and talk to us. You could be our next co-host or guest. Let me tell you a little more about each one of those groups. The atheist group is the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded by yours truly in 2002. We're in our 16th year. ASK now has nearly, about over 850 members, and you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheists.org. Or you can go directly to meetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheists. It's just that simple. Heck, you can Google Knoxville Atheists and it'll take you to it. If you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your area. Don't find one, start one. Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday night in Bearden at Black Horse Pub. It's on Kingston, just off Kingston Pike in Bearden. And we get together there every Tuesday night around 5:30, around happy hour, for food, drink, and conversation. Everybody's welcome as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville, as I mentioned earlier, is RET, Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years, and they have bi-weekly presentations and discussions in the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They tend to meet on the first and third Sundays in the Goins Administration Building, Cafeteria Annex. And if that's too much to remember, you can just go to rationalist.org anytime you want to and click on upcoming events. There's also a group called the Sunday Assembly. This started in England just a few years ago and has currently spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in gods, but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. Heck, who wouldn't like to get together with their friends and family for any reason at once or twice a week? This particular group only meets once a month. On the fourth Sunday, they meet at the International Building down near the World's Fair site. One more thing. The Secular Student Alliance is not active right now very much because it's summer, school's out. But when school starts back, they'll come back. The Secular Student Alliance has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement or who would just like to find other free thinkers to hang out with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. Let's see. Any other announcements? I don't think so. Let's talk just a minute about deconversion stories. Every atheist out there, well, 95% of them, I guess, this is one of the things that religious people don't really realize about atheists, especially Christians don't realize about it, is they try to proselytize to us. They try to come to us and get us to join their religion. We don't have one, right? So we need one. But that's not really the case with atheists. Most of us have been to religion. We've been there, done that, got the t-shirt, and moved on. So we generally know a lot about the Bible, know a lot about religion, and all of the ins and outs of the religious belief and arguments. So if you want to talk to us, that's fine. But trying to proselytize to us is pretty much an empty sleeve at that point. Oh, here's Ty. Hold on. Hello there. Hey, I'm fine. Hold on. I'm going to have to shut off this Bluetooth that's rerouting it. I'll be right back. And Bluetooth off. Okay, I'm going to plug you into the board so we can hear you. And say something and see if we can.
Hey, what's up? It's the Wombat!
Okay, I think I hear you, but it's just not very loud. Hold on.
Okay.
Okay, try it again.
Hey, it's the Wombat. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, sounds good.
Nice.
Okay,
awesome. Yeah. Okay, well, where are we so far?
Well, I was talking a little bit about deconversion stories and how people, if they feel like they've got a deconversion story of their own, you know, how they left religion, how they realized their religion was just a bag of air and moved on and found out that the world is natural and nothing more to it than that, then I was going to recommend that they write it down and share it online. And if they wanted to, they could go online and do a search for deconversion stories. You can find people, all kinds of deconversion stories from Christian, Islamic, even Muslim, and I mean not Muslim, Mormon.
All kinds. From all over.
Right. There are many groups out there that are former religious groups, and I would recommend that people seek them out for more like-minded thoughts and conversations. Go ahead.
I think it would be cool if they wanted to visit Atheist Society at Knoxville on Facebook. Check out that group and post their story there. If they want to have some really good, meaningful feedback with people within their area about their deconversion stories, because I bet you every atheist there will have a good one.
Yeah. And everybody, I guess, once they start reading, has their favorite one. There are a lot of videos. As a matter of fact, go to YouTube, and there are a lot of videos where people have not only written down their stories, but have put it on video. And one of my favorites is one called Leaving Christianity, Why I'm No Longer a Christian. It's by Evidence 3, and the reason that I pronounce his name like that, it's spelled EVID3NC3. So look up Evidence 3, and it's Why I'm No Longer a Christian. It's about the best, well-documented, and well-produced story of leaving Christianity from a real fundamentalist Christian who's now an atheist. So I recommend that highly. Otherwise, and if you're just looking for general purposes, just say, go to Google and type in leaving and your religious name, like leaving Christianity or leaving Mormonism, Islam, that type of thing. And you'll find many resources out there like that.
Absolutely true. And I highly recommend it. That, Facebook, Google, all these things can be your best friends for you to realize that if you do have a deconversion story, you really aren't alone after all.
Right. 10-4. Now, you wanted to talk about something from our conversation before the show. You wanted to talk about certainty, I think, didn't you?
Yeah, Gnosticism, really. I have a bone to pick. I don't know if I told you about this, but a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, I went over to the Ark Experience Museum, which is like an Ark replication or a replica model, supposedly, in Northern Kentucky. There was a protest going on there. Did I tell you about that? Maybe I should back up a little bit.
Yeah, you mentioned it. You didn't go into much detail.
Okay. So, like a few weeks ago, me and some other friends that I do street epistemology with went up there with the goal of doing some interviews with some of the outspoken atheists that are there. Because what we found is that when we're doing interviews, we can have like interviews with people who say they don't believe in a God, who don't believe in the Bible, who think that the notion of like spirituality and supernatural is unfounded, but are not comfortable with the A word. They're not atheists.
I can't imagine. God,
but they're not atheists. And so I'm fine with the words that people use to define themselves. And I guess really that goes into the theme of what we're talking about today.
You mentioned Gnosticism earlier on. You wanna define the word for us?
Yes. So I define myself as an atheist agnostic or an agnostic atheist. It doesn't really matter the order.
They're
not mutually exclusive terms.
Right.
Because an agnostic really refers to not knowing, like a person who doesn't know. And that's
at least claims not to know.
And a Gnostic is someone who claims to know.
Mm-hmm.
So like if I'm Gnostic about how many hairs are on my head, I'd say, hey, I'm pretty Gnostic about that. But if I didn't know how many hairs were on my head, I'd say I'm agnostic with regard to how many hairs there are on my head.
Right.
I think that's it. I know it's a number, but I just don't know what that number is. I can't demonstrate that I know it, that it's
right.
true.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who are atheists, for example, who are agnostic and atheists. Sometimes you'll hear people say agnostic as like a soft term for atheism.
Mm-hmm.
That's really
That's
really just them glamming on to like a more newer word.
Mm-hmm.
There's a strict word for it, but how they want to define themselves is fine, as long as what we mean is the same thing. And what they mean is basically, hey, I don't believe in a God, but I don't want to use the A word, A word. I'll use this other A word instead. When you have a Gnostic theist, that is someone who both claims to know that a God exists and believes in a God.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is, after I did a bunch of my talks, I did like 34 interviews, I had some feedback. I have like these business cards, and people can come back to me with like advice that they had, or like impressions that they had of the talk, or like further arguments that they want to propose. And I talked with a lot of Christians, and when I'm face to face, I'm really good with talking to people because I use like a method called street epistemology. That method is about not getting the conversation into an argument. It's about like having a nice, productive chat with someone. But over text, it's a lot harder for me to like exploit the skills that I'm good at to have like a pleasant conversation with someone. And especially when that person refuses to even come to terms with like basic definitions of what I define myself as, not what the words they want to define me with, but the words I want to define myself with. So I was talking with a guy and I was like, I'm an atheist. I told him I'm an atheist and I'm trying to, and it's cool that you're a Christian and it's cool that we can have a conversation. And he says basically like, well, yes, all atheists claim that there's no God. And therefore, and I was like, wait, before we move on to the rest of your arguments, because there was like pages and pages of arguments that you have for proof of God, I was like, I just want to make sure that we can like come to terms on like the more simpler measures, which is how I define myself as an agnostic atheist. Like, I don't know if a God exists, but I also don't believe in a God. That doesn't mean that I'm saying there's no God. That's right. A claim that requires knowledge. And I'm not saying I'm a Gnostic theist, one that knows that there's no God and also doesn't believe in a God. But I'm saying I don't know that there's a God and I don't believe in him. Do you understand that? And he went on a roll. I'm telling you, and I thought, man, this is crazy.
Yeah, well, we can't have that. I mean, his whole speech was routed around that one definition, and it's a straw man definition,
to
be sure.
That was a problem.
Yeah.
not a problem. Like, he was preparing himself for a straw man of atheism. And I have it on video of, like, many people who, like, present, like, so you're an atheist, that means you don't, that means you know, you think there's no God whatsoever.
Or that you say there are no gods. Yeah, yes.
And I'm like, well, what do you mean when you say atheist? And I'll let you know if I follow that definition. And most of the time I don't. I think what's going on is that there is an attempt by the religious front to straw man atheism into a term that's a lot easier to take down. And when confronted with the reality that the term that they are going under, which is Gnostic atheism, is not nearly comprehensive of all of the entirety of atheism, much more the reasonable form of atheism, probably the most reasonable form on the God position period.
Yeah.
They don't want to respond to that.
Let's not mince words. You know, if they're using a straw man argument to make their argument, and they know that it's a straw man argument, another word for that is lying. They're building a case they know isn't true, and they're presenting it as truth.
It's incredibly dishonest. And the thing was, if I was face-to-face, maybe we could be able to work this out. But, like, over the text, it's, like, it's very difficult to have a meaningful conversation when someone's being obstinate with the words they're using to describe you. And it wasn't just one guy. This is, like, I talked with 9 theists while I was there during my set of interviews.
Yeah.
Not all nine, but let's say 8 out of 9. The 8 out of 9, but the 9th one also prayed for me at the end of his email and told me that I need to shape up or else God's gonna come for a reckoning.
Has it come yet?
No, he hasn't, but he did tell me God bless afterwards. And I'm like, okay. Well, you know, hey, God bless and all that good stuff.
Conflicting
to you, sir. I just laughed at
messages
that.
There.
Sure, I know, right? Like, that's really, it's crazy how, atheists are willing to use the word of their, you know, deity as a screw you. messages. But let's focus on this agnosticism because it goes both ways because there's actually a story in here where I meet a Gnostic atheist. But the thing is, so when you are dealing with someone who's strawmanning you and your position, before they can continue with their argument, it's absolutely imperative that you make sure you address your point of view and where you're coming from. Because beyond that, if they aren't willing to recognize that, you're following along the straw man argument that they are purporting that you have or that you are under. And it's not worthwhile to have that kind of conversation if they aren't willing to meet you there. Like, in the sense of, I'm willing to use words and you are willing to use words. But if we're going to have a conversation, we need to have agreement on terms and what they mean in order for us to have a meaningful dialogue. And if they aren't willing to meet you that far, at least by a text, it's not worth having that kind of conversation.
Right. At that point, they can walk away and say they won, though. They do.
Sure. They can go back to their little party and, like, have a little association. But what's not worth it is to be stressed out telling them the same thing over and over again. Next time, so, like, here was the thing. I was having a conversation with one of the Christians that I had met during the protest, and I asked them, so what would you call someone who, doesn't believe in a God, and what would you call someone that does believe in a God? And he said, well, I call them both theists, because there's no possible way you can't believe in a God.
Yeah, I've heard it. And he just defined atheism out of existence. The same way that they try to define their God into existence.
Right. And I said, could you please find me the definition where someone that doesn't believe in God is a theist? Can you please find me that definition? You couldn't find it. But he did send me a definition from dictionary.com that had one of four different definitions that was for it was the belief that no God exists. And I said, that's fine. That could be one of the definitions, because certainly a person that believes that no God exists also doesn't believe in that God. But right. The other three of the four definitions that you showed me on the website that you showed me were all lack of belief in a God, or like withholding belief for God, or a state of being unconvinced that a God's real. Right. Like all three of those things are far more encompassing than what atheism is.
Uh-huh.
Particularly because all four of those people, the person who says there's no God and the person who's not convinced of God, and all those other definitions in that same vein, all those people believe that there's not a God. Don't believe in a God. All those four people don't believe in a God.
Right.
And that makes them.
And some large portion of them may actually believe that there's not a God. But, I mean, it's a subset of a major set, a larger set.
Sure, and it's not the thing that makes you an atheist.
Right.
It's
like some atheists with brown eyes. That's a subset.
Yeah, there are some tall atheists, too. That doesn't make you atheist as well.
Right.
Though, what's interesting is when I brought that up to him, my argument wasn't that his definition was false with regard to, atheists say that there's no God. My argument was that his argument's not comprehensive and doesn't reflect the general thing that all atheists share, which is a disbelief in God. But once he admitted that, even if my definition doesn't encompass it, it's at least half the definitions, because he twisted one of the definitions to suit his definition of actually does kind of believe in a God, but decides not to anyway. And I'm like, okay, even if it's 50-50, you're not comprehensively explaining all the different forms of atheism. There's like agnostic atheism, and there's agnostic atheism. And you're talking to an agnostic atheist as if I was a Gnostic atheist. And the arguments that you're purporting that I support are not the ones that I actually support at all. And so if you want to have a meaningful conversation with me, you should at least be able to recognize that I don't fit this model that you're purporting that I do.
Right.
And
acknowledge
the conversation wasn't really positive after that. He said, well, I think that's irrelevant. The definitions of atheism is relevant to my overall argument. Here's my proof for God. And at that point, I didn't read the rest of the email. I was like, okay, well, I think we're done here.
Yeah.
You got to be willing to walk away, I guess. I don't know. What do you think? Am I ranting?
No, I agree. I mean, there comes a point when you realize that you're either arguing with a stone or a wall. It's like so the guy says, so you've been to Israel? Yeah, you've been to Jerusalem? Yeah. Did you pray at the wall? He says, yeah. Well, what was it like? He says, like talking to a wall. And some people are like that. You know, they don't come to a conversation to learn anything. They come to make a point and stand by the point, and they have all their walls up. I mean, and your conversation is basically a waste of time, because it's not basically a conversation. The information for his point of view is in one direction, and then nothing shall pass, as it were. And I agree.
And not only that,
wasting your time.
He had a personal dictionary that he had published online that he wanted me to link to. I'm not going to publish this video, but he said his website basically had like religious terms defined based on his perspective, uh-huh, and like had an extra paragraph of where he was coming from. And of course he messed up the definition for atheism on that.
Uh-huh.
And,
to me, it's like Encyclopedia. I mean, Wikipedia tries to at least tell unbiased facts about any situation. But then if you talk to conservatives, and they say, well, Wikipedia has a liberal bias, just like regular news does.
What?
So they create their own universe, their own spin, and they create a conservapedia. If you haven't been there, it's some fun to go and see what they have written there. But it's a very conservative take on everything in the world, including liberals and progressives and gays and religion and everything else in the world that could possibly be skewed in that direction.
Yeah, definitely.
But it sounds like that's what your friend does. He's created his own universe. He's defined his universe into existence, and he's living in it, which to me is a mental illness.
We'll get there. But what I'm saying is there's something about convincing someone that they're wrong when they make a public statement about the thing that they believe to be true.
Uh-huh.
It's one thing to catch a guy in a hallway and be like, hey, remember that thing that you're planning on saying? Let me make some corrections here. Versus after the speech has been made to public, after their names put on the book, after their faces on every billboard with the quote, and then you come to them and be like, hey, by the way, let me make some corrections to this quote. Like, no. I've already publicly invested my identity into this, my public identity to this. It's a lot harder to change that course. So, like, when he had his website, and I was telling him, hey, this definition they have is not accurate, like, it's obviously not comprehensive. We both agree that it's not all the definitions of atheism. He was still ardently focused on keeping the definition that he had strictly on his website. And I can see that it's difficult for people when they publicly make the adjustment. I think there are parallels to when a, for example, like when you join a church, you don't just, you know, sign a paper and you're in. Like, they bring you in front of the church. They walk you in front of the congregation. Mm-hmm. They sign your name on, like, the wall, maybe, depending on where you are. If you're, like, a Muslim, it's, like, a big old thing where you're brought in with your entire family and brought into the fold. If you're Jehovah's Witness, it's very similar patterns as well.
Yeah.
They lock you in to an ideology with social pressure.
Right.
And you can put that social pressure on yourself. And I feel like
Sure. Not
only is it hard to, like, tell someone that they're wrong, but explaining it in a way that doesn't make them upset automatically because they closely identify with their conclusion is very difficult. Plus, when they publicly express that and you try to challenge them on that, it's almost impossible.
Well, not only that.
It's even more so than we're text.
But, and if you cross them and you get expelled from the church, one of the major punishments of the church is shunning. They shun you. And it's not just the congregations. If you joined as a family, they try to get your family to shun you as well. It's expulsion. It's
right.
Excommunication, as the Catholic Church expresses it. If you want to join the church and your family doesn't, then they tell you to leave your family. So it's like cults. You know, that's what cults do.
It is cults. I mean, it's exactly like a cult. It's exactly what a cult would do. I would also say this, too. No one likes getting some of their family, but there's no way that you can turn on belief in your head.
Right.
Like, that's not a switch that's controlled by you. And I had a friend explain it really well. He said, like, I like chocolate. Even if I said in the morning, I don't like chocolate. When I eat chocolate, I like it. Even if I said it all night and through a day,
or even
I'm still
going
to like chocolate when I taste it.
Even if you tortured him and made him say it, it wouldn't change the fact that he still likes it, which is how stupid the Spanish Inquisition was. You know, if they bring in non-believers and they torture them into saying that they do believe, and then they turn them loose or kill them if they don't. But how stupid is it? Because you cannot make yourself believe something that you're not convinced is true.
Sure. You make like three different desserts and one of them has chocolate in it. Even if he doesn't know which dessert explicitly has it, he's going to like the one that tastes like chocolate. Like in his head, he likes chocolate. And it's not a decision. It's just an aspect of that person.
Right.
And it's going to take more than just people shunning him to make him change his mind in a sense. And in the same way, you can't choose really what you believe. You either believe it's true based on the evidence, you're convinced, or you're not convinced. And the fact of the matter is that they want them to be in the fold. If you don't want people to leave your church, if you want people to stay ardent and reverent, shunning them isn't the way that's going to make them change their mind. Coming up with good evidence and good methodologies to get the conclusion is what's going to do it.
Right.
And no one has done that yet. And that's why when people leave the church, they tend to do it for good. For better or worse, and for all the drama that churches put on them, it's not worth it. And so drama is not good, basically. So I'm just trying to
That's true.
And it's not worth it. So, I don't know.
And it's dishonest.
Bottom of the hour?
Yeah, it is.
Are we all right?
We've come to the bottom of the hour and need to do a station identification. I usually play one of our many, many atheist songs, or at least non-religious songs. And if you take the attitude that anything that doesn't have Jesus in it is atheistic, then,
a lot of atheists.
You know, all the top 40 songs pretty much are atheist songs. But this one definitely has a kind of an atheist flavor because it's about science and the cosmos and our place in the cosmos. This is done by the Symphony of Science. It's called Our Place in the Cosmos. And if you'd like to hear more from them, just go to YouTube and do a search for Symphony of Science. We'll be back in about 3 or 4 minutes and continue our conversation. Write down this phone number, though, in case you need it, and call in and talk to us. 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937. Back in a minute.
With every century, our eyes on the universe have been opened anew. We are witness to the very brink of time and space.
We must ask ourselves, we were so proud of our accomplishments. What is our place in the cosmic perspective of life? The cosmic perspective.
The exploration of the cosmos is a voyage of self-discovery. As long as there have been humans, we have searched for our place in the cosmos.
Are there things about the universe that will be forever beyond our grasp? Are there things about the universe that are ungraspable?
One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, finite and lonely, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be you. Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
As the ancient mythmakers knew, we're children equally of the earth and the sky. In our tenure on this planet, we've accumulated dangerous evolutionary baggage. We've also acquired compassion for others, love for our children, and a great, soaring, passionate intelligence, the clear tools for our continued survival.
We must ask ourselves, we were so proud of our accomplishments. What is our place in the cosmic perspective of life?
We could be in the middle of an intergalactic conversation, and we wouldn't even know. Are there things about the universe that will be forever beyond our grasp? Are there things about the universe that are ungraspable?
One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, finite and lonely, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be you. Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
We've begun at last to wonder about our origins, star stuff, contemplating the stars, tracing that long path. Our obligation to survive and flourish is owed not just to ourselves, but also to that cosmos, ancient and vast, from which we spring.
One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, finite and lonely, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be you. Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
Think of how many stars, planets, and kinds of life there may be in this vast and awesome universe.
With every century, our eyes on the universe have been opened anew. We are witness to the very brink of time and space.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. Welcome back to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Dieter Five, and on the phone we have Wombat. Hey, Wombat.
The Wombat! Says hello!
He does. He's back. So where'd we leave off before we were so rudely interrupted by the clock?
Okay, so we were talking about Gnosticism and why these people are such knuckleheads.
Oh. Uh-huh.
I don't think the issue, is so much with atheist versus theist, though I know that's the most popular fight. I think what real issue is people who claim to know things who, that don't have the evidence to support that. And
right.
I know there's a lot the Gnostic theists who claim that. Mm-hmm. But Gnostic atheists that claim the same thing drive me up a wall in the same way. And I guess we're talking about that. Maybe that alternative.
Sure. But so you were talking about one just before the break about how he claims that there's no God and that he can prove it. Because if you make a claim, you should be ready to prove it. How did he prove it?
Sure. I can walk us through that scenario again. I'm not sure if we got to it just before break, but we had just finished talking about Gnostic theists and really rude ones that I had met that talked me rudely by email. But when I was in person with them, I was able to use better skills, social skills, to handle that situation, a much more placid conversation. Email, I'm not so good, and I'm working on it. On a side note, we have a Street Epistemology Facebook group. And a lot of newcomers from around the world join it, and we're really happy about that. One recent member was a Gnostic atheist. And that means someone that claims to know that there's no God, as in they can demonstrate it to be true, and also doesn't believe. And so we were both atheists.
Right. And I'd like to interject here that if you make a claim, you shoulder the burden of proof. Like Christians claim there's a God, and which is one of the biggest problems that atheists have with Christians is, well, show us the proof. And all they do is point to a dusty old Bible or some purported miracles or something that's really not a miracle. And then they claim that is proof and we don't buy it. That's basically what atheism is all about. But if an atheist claims that there's no God, if they make that claim, then they shoulder the burden of proof. Did he have the burden? Did he have the proof?
Oh, he absolutely had a burden of proof they had to demonstrate. So he had a table set up, something like how my table set up, where it's like a big sign at a table. My sign says, let's chat about whatever you want, very casual, and I get topics about anything. Sometimes it's about religion, something like that.
And a lot of times you don't talk about religion. You talk about something else.
Totally not. Yeah. Right. And then his sign said, talk to an atheist. And it had atheists in a nice pilot blue. And so a sign like that is only going to guarantee you talking about religion for the most part.
Right.
And the people who approach you will either be
supportive
Christians who are hoping to try to convert you in that conversation, or atheists who are looking forward to talking to another person who's so outspoken about being an atheist.
Right.
And the first and the first conversation he had was with the latter, an atheist and a friend, ex-Muslims. This is as far as street person was what, ex-Muslims in America? Let's go. So the two ex-Muslims sit down at the table and they're basically yeah, you're an atheist too, cool. So we both don't believe in a God, but we're at least open to it. But the idea is we just didn't have a really good evidence and we didn't
give us the evidence. Convince us.
Give it the evidence and we'll believe it. But for the most part, we just don't believe because of that. And the street epistemologist said, well, that's wrong because there is no God. And if the foundation of all reason and logic will show you that there's no such thing as God, they're just very improbable and it's not true. So I know you're saying you don't believe, but that's weak agnosticism. That's not even atheism. That's just weak agnosticism. He was using terms that I wasn't even really familiar with, and he was labeling the guys in the conversation. And it came off as a little bit rude.
Yeah.
And it was very bizarre to watch a guy who's an agnostic atheist do street epistemology, because I'd only ever really seen it be done by agnostic atheists. That is, atheists who are at least open to the idea that a God exists, but are just at least looking for better evidence to get there. Until then, they're not human. So
maybe
my belief is that
maybe he was an agent provocateur. Maybe he was a Christian. What do you call it? Acting as an atheist and trying to put the wrong values to the word so it would really confuse people.
No, he's from Russia and he has a very more straightforward point of view. So he's his accent's pretty thick and he's this is the way it is. Don't worry about it. You do that. No, you're out.
Is an agent provocateur. They're trying to divide us.
So I after he posted that video, and I got in contact with them because I have a little study group called The League, which is just basically a bunch of street epistemologists from around the world who come together and try to give each other positive critical feedback so we can get better at the things that we do. I had a conversation with him and tried to let him know the terms that he is under the impression are applicable to people may not necessarily be the most popular version of those terms. And in a conversation with someone who's trying to, like, identify themselves to you, maybe not the word itself matters, but, like, the meaning of the word to them matters the most. And the meaning of the word to them is more or less in line with the popular definition of the term, which is, you know, an atheist is someone who doesn't believe in a God, a theist is someone who does believe in a God.
Right.
An agnostic is someone who doesn't know if a God exists. Gnostic is someone who does know a God exists.
Yeah, or
and
claims.
You could be,
claims to.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't necessarily warn, but I said, like, there's no need to say that there is no God, because then you're adopting a burden of proof.
Mm-hmm.
And what do I mean by burden of proof? You know what I'm talking about?
To me? Yeah. Or did he?
What do I mean by that?
Yeah, well, if you make a claim, like I was saying earlier, you need to be able to back up the claim. Like if I say, if I walked up to you and said, look, I can create fire in my hand right now, and you could say, prove it. And I'd say, what? You don't believe me? And prove I can't.
Yeah.
That would be dumb. Mm. Because I
don't
mean,
like it.
You know, but if I pulled out a lighter and I opened it up and I flicked it, and I'd have fire in my hand. You know, so that would be shouldering the burden of proof and producing the proof. You know,
right. It's also a demonstration that you know it to be true.
Right. You should be able to back up your claim. In other words, just simply put.
Yeah. Yeah. Demonstrate it or hesitate it.
No, remember, it's still up to the person who you're talking about whether they believe it or not. I mean, I can make a fire in my hand by doing that, and he said, oh, that's not what I meant by fire in your hand. You know, I still don't believe you can make fire in your hand. You know, beliefs are tricky things. To know one thing is because you're convinced of it. It's a different scale of belief. Believing something is you're convinced of it, but knowing something is you're convinced to it, like the nth degree. It approaches knowledge. Which is, a very firmly established belief with good grounds, I would say.
Not only that, but, like, knowledge can be demonstrated. If I claim I know French and we take a French test and pass it, that's a pretty good indication that I've demonstrated to you that
and
I know French.
That's what scientists do. They make a claim, they put out their papers saying how they reached this conclusion, and then they submit it to something of their peers, I can't think of the word, a group of their peers, to evaluate it and read what they said and be able to reproduce it. And if they can't, then they're fully justified in doubting it or not believing it. But if they can do it in their own laboratory, they've got every reason to believe it. And then they would also raise that belief to the level of knowledge if they could reproduce it consistently.
Right. So I think what's really important was realizing what the default position is on a claim. Because when someone makes a claim, you can either believe that claim is true or you can say that it's not true. By not true, I mean false. So we'll just say true or false.
Mm-hmm.
So if I made a claim, you would either believe that it's a true claim or it's not a true claim or a false claim. But
there's a third position. Not having an opinion on it, you know. The moot position,
exactly.
The null position.
That is the default position that everybody has before they even hear a claim.
Right.
But the Gnostic atheist that I was speaking to says, well, everybody doesn't believe something by default. The not believing something and say the negative claim is the default position. And I said, no, actually, if I were to say I flipped the coin in the air and I caught it, and it could be heads or not heads. Like, or if it's on the back of my hand, and now it has to be heads or tails.
Right.
I can either say it's heads or tails, or say I don't know. And I don't know is actually the true default position.
Right.
Not only that, but saying I don't know means I adopt no burden of evidence, really, because I know that I don't know, and I can demonstrate that I don't know it.
Uh-huh.
Like, we can test, and I can prove it to you that I don't know if it's heads or tails. That's very simple to do. But if you say it's heads, and I say it's not heads as my response, like, if that's the negative response, I'm implicitly saying that it's tails, which implies that I need to prove that to, like, if I'm trying to counter your claim. But you don't have to counter the claim. In fact, the best position, the best answer in a situation where you don't have conclusive evidence is I don't know.
Right, exactly.
And a lot of people don't want to say that answer.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's the agnostic position.
And which is the agnostic position. So, again, in my opinion, the agnostic position is the best position to have when you don't have conclusive evidence. to come to
or you have evidence, but it doesn't. You have maybe have evidence, like some people point to the Bible and say evidence, you know, but at the same time, from your position, you say, okay, I'll say that's evidence. I'll also say it's not very good evidence. It's very minimal evidence. It's not, doesn't raise my belief to the level of being positive. Because there there are 3,000 religions around the world, and they all have a book, and each book conflicts the others, you know.
Right. So, like, if I believe one holy book, if, like, my methodology is I believe in a holy book and therefore a God exists, there are a lot of different holy books.
Mm-hmm.
Do all those gods exist?
Yeah.
The moment you say no, you now need to have a higher standard of evidence.
Yeah.
And what are you using to supplant the evidence that you have if you're just basing it off holy books?
Yeah. And Homer Simpson put it pretty well. If I pick the wrong religion, every time I go to church, I'm just making God matter.
It's a good point. Mm-hmm. So I guess I said to him, the reason why I say I don't know it's the better position, I told him, is that if I am talking to a Christian and they say they believe in a God and I say, well, there's no God, the first thing, you may not say it with these exact words, but you will get this response more or less, is prove it. Prove that there's no God.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, you put yourself in a precarious position because now you've adopted a burden of proof that, one, you didn't need to adopt whatsoever, but two, in the event that you can't explain your point concisely, or if you're to an audience and you can't sell your idea in a convincing manner, your proof that of no supernatural beings, when you have no means of testing the supernatural, you know, you put yourself in a position where if you fail, the person who had the position that was opposed to you appears to win, and you actually can make the person who's a theist or like a Gnostic theist look much better when you fail to disprove their God. And you should never put yourself in a position where someone who presents a claim without a burden of evidence or burden of proof would be right by default if you can't support your position.
Right. And that it's not necessary. It's unnecessary.
It's entirely unnecessary. It's wasted energy because there's so many people with baseless claims that you can't possibly go around telling each of them that they're wrong without finding an incredible amount of evidence that seems to be impossible to get.
Right. And when I come across somebody who says they're a deist, I don't even bother arguing with them. Excuse me. For those who don't know, a deist is a person who believes that a God created the universe, but he either didn't stick around or didn't bother to become involved with the people that later evolved. In other words, he was either blown up in the Big Bang, or he just left, or he died of old age, or whatever. Or maybe it was a scientist who created this universe in a test tube or something, and then he moved on to something else. But in other words, it's not a personal God. Like Einstein would say, he didn't believe in a personal God, but a lot of times he would refer to the universe itself as a God. And there are some people that do that, and you can't really prove, of course, that one, you can't prove that the universe is a God, and two, you can't prove it's not. A deist has no dogma, and when it comes to religion, dogma's the problem. You know, when somebody tells you that they know what the creator of the universe wants you to do, that's a problem.
I was recently doing an interview with a guy named Jacob at the process. I just released that video. And he told me that a God that is a deist God, like one, a God that doesn't exist and a God that has no evidence of existence are basically one and the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, you're still in the same position where you're unconvinced. So like people who claim that a deist God exists or have as much evidence for that God as one that doesn't exist at all. And therefore, it's not a really compelling statement to make. And I would say to the people who call the universe God, I think I just did an interview with Aaron Lai, and he said something really cool. Like, if we called a tail a leg, how many legs would a dog have? And he looked at me, and I was waiting for the answer, and he told me 4 legs, because it doesn't matter what you call it.
Something.
So I still got 4 legs. I'm like, oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the question is calling the universe God necessary and sufficient? Like, that's the real meter of how we determine if a label.
Well, we've already got a word for universe. Why do we have to cloud it up with this, all this extra baggage?
Right. And does, if we call it the universe God, wouldn't we need more terms to clarify what we mean by that? Like, it seems like we're just using it as a label for something that we already have an established meaning for. It doesn't seem necessary to call it that. And calling it God doesn't imply that it's a universe. It just means like you added this new term on top of something that has a lot of baggage associated with
and
it.
And most people, doesn't necessarily mean like most people understand that a God has a will, a purpose, a reason for doing things. An agency, as it were, but
the
universe
does.
You're
making my point.
The universe is just a natural. Well, we don't know if it's naturally occurring or not. I assume it is, but ever since the Big Bang, everything else has been naturally occurring. So why would we want to throw a purpose in there when it's just all random and organized by the laws of nature itself?
Not only that, but like people think like the universe is, you know, cater itself to the existence of life, when the giant expanse of the known universe as we know it is incredibly hostile to life. Even on Earth, like we have diseases, we can only exist on what is basically the surface of the skin of an apple, if you were to consider an apple the Earth. Like all that core, all that, like an inch above the maybe even like a centimeter above the surface of like an apple, we wouldn't be able to survive. The air's too thin. Like we're living on a very, very thin veneer that we've somehow made hospitable to us with our own technology, forth light, and hard work.
And that's not even considering the fact that three quarters of it is covered with water, which we can't just walk out on and live. So we're talking,
and
you know,
filled with sharks about, and salt water at that. It's
about 25 to 30% of the surface of the land. I mean, of the planet is just livable.
It's insane.
A lot of that's
insane. Moreover, even if we maintained the current level of production that we have right now, we'd eventually kill ourselves because of the pollution that we're putting in the air. So, like, we are on a constant struggle to survive in this world, yet people think like this whole thing is catered for us and everything's perfectly balanced for us. Like, no, this has been a struggle since day one. We've been working hard to keep our finger on the mark. We've been doing it for like about 10,000 years. Great. Which is nothing compared to the millions and millions of years every other animal had been on the planet before us.
And we
are the new kids on the block, and we're trying the best our kids.
We don't even have to poison ourselves for it to be the end of it. All we got to do is like poison like the bees, or you know, one crucial subsystem of this very complex system we call the ecosystem of the earth. And once that happens, it's going to throw it out of kilter. And the earth does not care if we're here or not. It's going to throw us off like an old rag if we throw it out of kilter. And then in a few million years, it'll have a new balance.
Which is not necessarily a thing where we're saying, hey, atheists are doom and gloom, and, you know, that's bad news. It's really a call to arms to say, hey, we have one planet.
Right.
Let's do our best to take care of it.
Stop waiting for an invisible deity or boy, invisible friend to do it for you.
Right.
Get off your butt and go do it. You know, take the
pick
action necessary
trash
to save our planet. That's right.
Right. Pick up your trash. Stop throwing stuff in our food, water supply. Don't like dump oil down your sinks. Like pick up the dog poop if you walk your pet so it doesn't like fester on the ground and get other people sick.
Yeah.
There's like a variety of things that you could do that are small that if we all do it together, we can make this world a better place.
Yeah.
And we can do it if we stop being cynical and start doing putting our worst actions immediately.
Yeah.
And
can
it's
imagine,
totally possible to do it right now.
Can you imagine what this world would be like if we took all the effort that we've been putting into religions for the last 3,000 or 4,000 years and actually have put it into a cooperative effort to make the world a better place?
Well, that's the dream. In my opinion, I think we've had a period called the Enlightenment, which is just the spark, which is where people started
and
realizing.
And it can die out. That's the problem. If we're not careful, we can lose the Enlightenment.
Oh, absolutely. But I think where we're at is much past the spark. Like, again, we have secular societies. We have secular countries. We are getting becoming more secular even in America, and we're working harder at it. And if we develop more means of communicating with each other and have more platforms for people to leave religion and still have a sense of community, not be shunned, and be able to work with other people to help other people get out, we will have a chain reaction that will hopefully get more and more people to realize secular values, to realize the social contracts that we value among different people, regardless of what we look like, and actually have like societies that are geared towards science and finding really, really reliable ways
to attack problems that we've been facing and trying to ignore that we can't ignore for much longer. And I think it's important that we all get on that same page sooner rather than
later. One thing to keep in mind is that science is just a tool. There are a lot of ways that we can help each other without invoking science. You can feed your neighbor. You can help a homeless person out when the weather turns bad. You can give them a coat. You know, there's all kinds of ways that we can make this world a better place without invoking the demons of science, as some would say.
So I would say if I could throw out one more thing, this is kind of tangential, but we had brought it up slightly. One of the conversations I had, so like I'm editing a bunch of interviews that I did. I did one with a bunch of Christian counter-protesters that were at the event, and they were all really positive. One argument that I kept getting over and over and over again was their proof for God. They were Gnostic theists, by the way, and the proof for God was that there was apparent design in everything. Like, everything seems to be designed. They had a worldview where everything was designed. Have you heard that one before?
Oh, yeah, the argument from design. I've got an article for it on my blog, but go ahead.
So I would say the argument from design is easy one to challenge. I normally don't do counter apologetics, but I throw in a bunch of stuff when I'm apologetics when I'm talking to someone. And so the way how I address it is, if you have a worldview, it's good to have a frame of reference to recognize what design is, because how would you recognize design? And the way how I recognize design is by comparing to things that I know are designed, comparing it against things that I know are not designed. But in a worldview where everything's designed, down from the rocks to the people to the hair on my head, et cetera, you don't have a good frame of reference. You only have things that are designed. You have nothing that has been not designed. And because you can't compare it against anything that hasn't been designed, because in your worldview everything's designed, you really don't have a way to really truly confirm if something is designed, because you don't know what something that's not designed looks like.
Never have seen anything.
There's no example based on that worldview where everything makes sense. And I threw that out literally back to back three times to Christians who are watching me give it to other Christians at the table. And they still give me the same argument. I still give them the same response. And they're like, well, I guess I'll have to think about that. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about complexity.
That's basically Paley's watchmaker argument. And what you're basically saying, Paley would say, you know, you're walking along the woods, you look down, you see a pocket watch on the ground, you can assume that was designed. Because it's obviously designed, because it's got, you know, intricate workings and all that stuff. But since the point that you're making, I assume, is that because the grass next to it was also designed, and the trees next to it, and the ground was, you know, designed by God, how could you possibly say that one is different from the other, but just by looking at it? They're making your point, saying it's different. It's like a watch in a world full of watches.
It's like a watch full of beach watches, basically.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We got time for one more apologetic real quick?
Yeah, we got about 3 minutes. Well,
okay, cool. I also got a complexity argument as well.
Okay.
I'll hear people say, hey, I know my God's true because look at the complexity of the universe, look at all these systems that are depending on each other. And what I throw at them is something I call the light bulb example, where it's like, if I had a light bulb that took one step to screw into a hole, or a light bulb that took 30 steps to screw into the same hole, and they both produce the same amount of light, which one was better designed? And they will always say, if they're honest, the first light bulb that only took one step to screw into the hole.
Right.
And I say, it seems like simplicity is the hallmark of design, not complexity. So why is it that if we all like simple things, like simple fabrics, you know, like simple engines, like things that are like more simple
explanations,
like cooler, nicer phones. Simpler technology that can stuff more into like a phone so that we have better phones.
Right.
Why we always tend to walk away from complexity. Why is it when we look at something that's really complex like the universe, we then point to it and say, oh, well, that had to be designed because that was a grand designer. It should be like simple things that show, oh, this is really well designed or very non-complex and therefore good because that was made by God. Why point at something that's so obtusely designed and say that had to be made by an all-powerful wise creator? It seems like a simple method to make the universe would be better.
True.
And that's it. I rushed it a little bit, but that's more or less it.
No, that's right.
I want to give that
point.
argument.
It's always surprising to me that when nobody ever calls in and takes us up on some of the things that we say, and when they have, you know, I'm sure they believe that they have rock solid evidence, you know, that would refute us, but we go show after show without any calls, so maybe they're just taking it in and going to call us back one fine day altogether.
I will say if they like to address some of their comments online, they're free to go to Atheist Society at Knoxville on Facebook. It's the Facebook group Atheist Society at Knoxville. Ask. And they're free to post their questions there. There'll be a lot of people there who are really positive. And like I said, even if you call into this show, we're not here to judge you. We're not here to, like, turn you down. We're actually looking forward to hearing from people around the city about what they believe. And it's not, that's totally fine, too.
Mm-hmm. And don't worry about hell, either, because everybody's going to some of the religions' hell. Somebody else has got a hell just for you, but don't worry about it, because they've never proved that even souls are real, much less heaven and hell. So we'll see you next week. It'll be Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on Wednesdays at 7. See you then. Say bye.
Bye, Wombat.
Bye.
WOZOLP, Knoxville.